Reading from Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 1, now text 41. Actually, in text 40, which we read yesterday, when Adharma overwhelms Dharma, the family women are polluted, and Strishu Dushtasu Varshneya, the women are polluted. Varna mixing arises, Jayate Varna Sankham, which leads, of course, to strange project, that's Arjuna's point. Sankaro Narakayaiva, which means Sankara, mixing. This mixing leads only to hell. Sankaro Narakayaiva. Kula Gnanam for the family killers, Kulasichai, and for the family. Patanti Pitaro Yesham. The fathers, Pitaro, which means the forefathers. The fathers of them indeed fall. Fathers fall. Patanti Pitaro, the fathers fall. Indeed, the fathers of them, the forefathers. Lunta Bindodaka Kriya, because the activities of offering pinda, this little offering you make, and water are suspended or aborted. So, Arjuna's point here. Because Arjuna said in text 39 that the family is destroyed. And again, what does it mean? Obviously, people go on marrying and reproducing in a sense that are still families. But here, Kula, we have to understand the word Kula doesn't simply mean a bunch of people who are biologically related to each other. That's the point. A kula, a guru kula, for example. Guru's family, the guru's community. So the kula is a cultural family as much as a biological family. That's the point that has to be understood. So no matter who marries whom, you're still going to have a bunch of people biologically related to each other. But what you're not going to have is a cultural family in the Varnashram sense, because the culture was Varna specific. So, I mean, to give a very, I think a very good modern analogy, let's say a Jewish man marries a Christian woman, and then how do you raise your children? And so what often happens in cases like that is the children don't really have any formal religion. I mean, sometimes they just choose one, or sometimes they choose both. But also it happens, and I've talked to people who said, yeah, my parents, my mother was this, my father was that, and so they didn't really force anything on me, I didn't really have any really. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are cases like that. And if you have an extended family, where everybody's together from different so-called religions, sort of, then, you know what I mean, it's like so. Or let's say, for example, I mean, just to give a crude modern example. Let's say the mother's a music lover, but the father doesn't like music, so the kids. Whereas if both parents are music lovers, they might really bring the child into that. Mm-hmm. And so so if you have an extended family where the aunts and uncles are also very important, and they're also different, so this one's this, that one's that. It's just kind of like, well, child. What you don't have is a continuation of a, like a music family or an Orthodox Jewish family or a strict Christian family. It's not the same thing. Obviously, we're both parents. Now, for good or for worse, for better or worse, when both parents, and if you have a whole extended family, everyone is really into something, it's very likely the child is going to be into that. It's just practical psychology. And so if you have varna mixing, varna sankara, which Arjuna says, then the child is a child this, is a child that. And again, this is not a society where you think, I'll just go to some big city and go to community college and just do what I want. It's not the kind of society we're talking about. There are no community colleges, there's very little upward mobility. And where do you go? Because you go anywhere, the first thing people say is, well, what's your family? So this is a pre-industrial, simple society where there really are basically four different boxes you can be in. The four varnas. And which one are you? Because if you don't really fit in. Now, you can fit in, like for example, Roma Harshana. Roma Harshana was an example of Varna Sankara, where his mother was a Brahmin, his father was a Kshatriya. He became Roma Harshana, the stories of the Bhagavatam, where Balaram killed him. It was when Balaram came into an assembly where he had been put on the Vyasa Asana, or probably didn't call it that then because Vyasa was still around. But when he sat on the speaker seat, he was teaching the Bhagavatam, and they put him there because he was learned. Then Balaram came, he didn't offer Balaram any respect. It's almost like he was learned because he had a Brahmin mother, so he was a speaker. But his father was a Kshatriya, so he still had sort of like that pride, that competitiveness. So he didn't stand up for Balaram. And Balaram just took a straw of kusha grass, which is used for making kusha grass in the Vedic sacrifice, and just touched him with the grass. And he just keeled over dead. So it was sort of a bloodless revolution, as they say. But there was a case where someone, that was a case of Varna Sankara. So in a very strict Varna society where everyone really is, and again, to say you belong to Varna doesn't merely mean you do that kind of work. There's a whole social reality to it. It means you live within that community. You live, it's almost like a state within a state.
So, like, are you really even allowed to be friends with someone outside of your own?
People were friends, yeah, people actually were friends. Okay. But all the culture came from your varna.
Okay.
There's you, all your culture. So, if the family starts mixing, then their specific religious culture is lost because it's based on that. And if you think about it, again, if you think about it, there's no description really in, say, the Bhagavatam or the Mahabharata of people going to anything like a temple to worship, like a church or worship service. And Rukmini was going to see like the temple of Durga and the Deva Griha, the house, something like that. She was going to see Durga, but it's not. There's no description anywhere in the Bhagavatam. People like in a church, everyone gathers together and you sing prayers. So it's interesting. In fact, there are very few descriptions of collective religious activities back then. Very few activities except sacrifices. People perform sacrifices. So now, of course, Lord Chaitanya changed all that because he started the Sankirtan, the collective chanting.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that sort of religion in the modern sense, where everybody gets together and sings prayers. And I mean, Lord Chaitanya inaugurated the collective chanting of Hare Krishna. But if you think about it, let's say like in the sense of like in the early days of, Christian church, where they, even in the early days of Christianity, people meet and they sing certain hymns and they read from things. And of course, in the Jewish religion, they had their temple and they had their own services. So in the Bhagavatam, there really aren't any descriptions like that of people, of collective religious services.
What about within the Varnas?
Well, that's an interesting point. There were many religious duties. Like within your varna, in fact, all of life, like when you offered your food or did sacrifices or when you took bath, or when there were all kinds, like throughout the day, there's constant consciousness raising activity, and you had to really chant different prayers and perform different ceremonies in the morning and evening. So in that sense, it wasn't just meeting once a week, same. Mm-hmm. It was throughout the day. The whole day was regulated by religious activities. But those activities were specific also to varnas. Mm-hmm. And so you can see, and I think, again, to understand the force of Arjuna's argument, you have to think what life was like back then. It's like, where do you fit in? Because it was like, it was really, not to be an out, if you think of the word outcast, outside the cast, the word outcast really means outvarna. Isn't it? And to be an outcast means you don't really fit in a particular cast. Plus, there was, again, consider for the moment, there was very rigorous genetic engineering back then. And so people were Varna Sankara, mixed Varnas, then even their natures would be somewhat problematic. Because what if you have two different natures, but you have to be in one Varna? And so you really had like very pure Brahmins and pure Kshatriyas, at least in terms of their propensities, that they were these very pure types. And so if you're two Varnas, like the case of Ramaharshana, he had the learning of the Brahma, but he had the pride of a Kshatriya, and therefore he didn't stand up for Balaram. Mm. So also you can be like a bull in a china shop. You know that expression? In the sense that your nature doesn't really, it's not just social, it's a question of nature. Your nature is in two different places.
So is that maybe why things are so messed up these days? Because
oh, now it's a total mishmash.
Yeah. I mean, there's not even really much place for Kshatriya, is there?
No. Well, you have to become a leader of a corporation. Yeah. Fight against attack of the corporation and try to conquer them. Of course, but it's still business, so it's that's a degrading aspect. Yeah, nowadays there's just no sense of that. There's no sense of organic genetic engineering.
Then we can't also speak about Varna Shankara in that sense, because if there hasn't ever been here.
Well, because that's all there is. There's nothing but Varna Sankara nowadays. Mm. I mean, sometimes you see like, everything is completely mixed now.
Was that something that Prabhupada wanted for us to like restore the Varna Ashram system?
Well, not only Ashram. Of course, we always say Varna Ashram, but I think we're specifically talking about Varnas.
Okay. Sorry, I don't
know. I know, the boys always say Varna Ashram and they mean Varnas. So, but of course, the ashrams are also important. But if you say Varna, the chapter of Varna, Krishna mentions that in the Gita, to restore it, because Prabhupada, I think his main concern was to have put a head on the social body. So you have a situation where society in general is a headless body, and ISKCON, as I say, is a disembodied head. Because we have all this wisdom, but we have no arms and legs. We have no influence in society. We're almost no influence. So you have a headless body and a disembodied head. Mm. And Prabhupada wanted to connect them. Mm. Because he probably wanted to restore the varnas chiefly so that the wisest people could guide society.
So how do we change that? We need to go out in society and start. Yeah, exactly. How do we like integrate? Because
we have to persuade people, or we have to somehow persuade people, or somehow give them the impression that we are the natural teachers. Mm. is, so to speak, nowadays, a free marketplace of ideas. And that's the whole point. We have to, rather than think that there's some kind of manifest destiny, all the prophecies will be fulfilled, so all we, basically all we have to do is show up. Like just, you know, go downtown, jump up and down, dress in Indian village, and, you know, go down somewhere to wherever people assemble in your city, and go down Indian village, dress, jump up and down, bang on the drums and kartal, generate Krishna, and the prophecies will be fulfilled. And it's that easy. Just show up. It's almost like a rigged boxing match where all you gotta do is show up and just wave your arms around, the other guy's gonna fall down anyway because it's all rigged. My point is that we have to not merely show up, but we actually have to make an effort to attract people. We actually have to think. Which we're not used to. Because you know, we have the philosophy. So there's no need for philosophy because we have the philosophy. No, we have to really take other people seriously, not in the sense of believing that maybe they know better than we do what God is, but we have to, and although they do have insights, I mean, you know, you can always learn from everyone. Krishna is, we have the Siddhanta, we have the final truth of Krishna. And the process for the sages, bhakti yoga, and so on. So those things are correct. But like, if we want to go out and chant Hare Krishna in public places, we really need to think. Like, where should we go? How should we present ourselves? How good is the music? If we give up this sort of, I don't want to say arrogance, but this attitude of all we have to do is show up, it doesn't, then if we really take upon ourselves the responsibility of attracting people as opposed to showing up for the Hare Krishnas we already won, then we would have to take the trouble of figuring out how to make attractive music. Like, how can we sing Hare Krishna in public in such a way that it will actually attract people? Like, you might actually have to look into music. Not that we want to materialize it or complicate it, so unless you're an accomplished musician, you can't participate in the Hare Nama movement. I mean, that's another extreme. But we do have to think about it. How can we attract people to the chanting of Hare Krishna? How can we attract, how can we persuade people that this is the highest knowledge? How can we present it? What's the right language? Prabhupada wrote me a book and said, read my books and present it in your own language, in your own words. So Prabhupada asked me to translate his teachings into a language which was culturally effective. So we have to think. We actually have to think. It's not enough just to show up, we have to think.
There have been attempts of various devotees to get involved in politics and management, even political parties. So far that has not been successful.
No. Political parties are such nasty places. I'm thinking more of a brahminical activity in terms of just trying to find a language, trying to find a way to effectively communicate with people. Take the environmental movement. The environmental movement, animal rights movement, that's what everybody talks about now, apart from politics, in terms of higher thinking. So we have so much to say about that. We have so much to say about that.
So to connect the disembodied head, the rest of the modern society.
The headless body.
Yeah. We don't need to create the limbs out of on the head.
The body's already there.
Yeah, we just.
That's the whole thing. You see, we sometimes think we have to create a whole body. The Prabhupada said is that the Brahmins are the head of society. So we don't have to create the whole body, we just have to be the head. But somehow the head has to be neurologically connected to the body. So what does it mean for us in a social, cultural sense to be neurologically, we have to have our finger, so to speak, on the pulse of society. If you don't know what's going on out there, if you don't really understand people, how are you going to neurologically connect the head to the body? It's like we expect the headless body to get up and run to us and just jump into the head, you know? So we have to find the way to connect the head to the body. Because the body's not going to do the thinking for us. Whereas we think all we got to do is show up and just generate Krishna, and the body will figure out how to connect to that. But it's the head that thinks. Do you see my point? It's like we've actually missed a key point, which is it's the head that has to think of how to connect to the body. The body's not going to think of how to connect to the head, because the body's not thinking. And so we present ourselves in a way that's strange and bizarre to people, and then we think, well, they'll have to just think it through. No, they're not going to think it through. Because that's the body, not the head. Mm-hmm. So we've been waiting now, I guess we've been waiting for decades more, you know, for the head to do the thinking. Well, we just show up. So, on that happy note of fallen fathers and suspended pinda rituals,
Over the